It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 422. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free at www.instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. I have a stack of email. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number, 240-949-2450. That's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. I got three voicemails for tonight. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. On Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And of course, don't forget the wiki, mtswiki.com. I have a jam-packed show covering lots of material, lots of follow-ups to some past questions that I've brought out in the show and talked about. We still got a couple more follow-ups on LastPass. And if you listen to the last show, you understand I put out a retraction to some comments that I made in agreeing with a listener email. Everybody who uses LastPass, the LastPass army, let me have it, and rightfully so. And I went through that last week, but we still got a couple more little follow-ups to that. And then I just got just a ton of great questions and content and material. So before we get started, during the summer, it seems like everyone is on a different schedule. Vacations, shorter days, working remotely. So meeting all your clients and colleagues in person can be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face no matter where you are this summer. And you know, the summer's coming to an end. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to be able to collaborate with a group of people. Anybody can join the meeting with any device, whether it be an Android, an iPhone, iPad, and with one click, they can easily join the meeting. You can have unlimited meetings for one flat rate. For right now, you can get it free for 30 days. So go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code podcast. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on Try It Free, and enter the promo code podcast. To kick things off, this is from Sax, who is not here tonight. He sometimes joins in the chat. It's a late night when he joins us. It's 5 hours later over there, and he sent this voicemail.
Hey, Mike. This is Colin from Scotland. Sax in the chat. Just wanted to pick you up on Joe's comment on LastPass and not being able to reset the password via any online form. One of the features of LastPass is that the password is not stored by LastPass themselves. Many people think that's the only way that these sort of password stores can be truly secure. I mean, if you're storing the data online and someone within LastPass has access to the hash or any of the secure information for resetting that password, then essentially your passwords aren't that 100% safe. A lot of people can be a little bit concerned about this. It's certainly been a criticism of Dropbox in the past, that they have the ways to get in to your Dropbox. That is why that if you lose the master password and you can't get in, you're out of luck. Anyway, Keep up the good work. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks, Zach. And thanks. I know he sent that voicemail without listening to last week's show, I believe. So where I played a couple voicemails about that. I think we've kind of covered everything we can on LastPass. There might be some little mentions in some of the emails as I go forward, people are responding not just with that, but also some other content. So you might hear that still sprinkled throughout the show tonight. Here is a voicemail from Kate. And this is in response to pre-show comments last week where I made some negative comments about a 7-inch tablet. My comments were really directed at Apple, that I don't believe they need to come out with a mini tablet. I don't think they should play down to the competition, to everybody else. I think they should stick with their iPad that they have. And that's where my comments were. This is Kate's response to negative comments to a 7-inch tablet.
Hi, Mike. It's Kate Eels, Katester, talking to you from Kelowna in British Columbia here in Canada. I'm reacting to something that I think I heard in your last show, which you recorded on August 23rd. Now, I'll start by saying you didn't have my full attention because I was trying to make dinner and do a lot of other things while I was listening to the recording. And it doesn't seem like you've uploaded the recording, the edited recording yet, so maybe I've got this wrong. But I'm calling about your comments concerning tablets and iPads and things like that. And I just wanted to say that I think, you know my feeling about Apple and Apple products, so I agree with you. If you're locked into iCloud and stuff like that, then definitely an iPad is the way to go. But I've helped set up some clients' iPads, so you know they sure are beautiful and they work. But I've also set up some Android iPads for customers, including a beautiful 7-inch tablet, which was the Acer Iconia, I think. Far more economical, many, many apps, and in the same way that you're kind of tied into iCloud, you know, it's an Android tablet, it ties you into Google, but Gmail works great. And my customer can read books from, you know, read Amazon Kindle books, can read Kobo books. All of those apps will run on a tablet. So unlike a Kindle Fire where you're basically reading books from Amazon or whatever the thing is from Barnes & Noble, Nook, and the Kobo Reader, an Android tablet will allow you to enjoy content from all of those places. And then the other thing that I want to say is that a tablet, it seems to me, is used more to consume content than it is to create content. So I don't think that it's always a valid comparison between a tablet and a notebook, or a tablet and even a netbook. I need a device with a keyboard on it too. But that's because I'm creating content or I'm testing something. It's not because I'm consuming content. And if I had the disposable income, I'd probably dispose of it in a way that would allow me to consume content on a tablet. And it would certainly be an Android tablet. That's just my preference. I don't think it's, I think a seven, I think there's a tremendous market for a 7-inch tablet, because not all of us want to lug a 10-inch tablet around. I mean, my customer doesn't want a 10-inch tablet. She wanted a 7-inch tablet. That's what she got. She can even watch TV on it. It's awesome. She has smaller hands and smaller fingers, and she's a smaller person than some of us. I don't think that a 7-inch tablet is is a bad thing. I think just like a preference between Android and Apple or even a Windows tablet, I guess there's some of those around too. It's just a preference. It's just what works good for the person who's consuming the content. So now that I've gotten that off my chest, I just want to say thanks for a really good show, and I'm actually looking forward to hearing the rest of it and concentrating on all of it. So I'm sorry if I'm off base here, but just kind of a reaction to what I thought I heard. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Kate, for taking the time to put the voicemail together. Kate's responding to something that came up in a pre-show, my dislike for the 7-inch tablets, really. And it was really the comment about that I made about Apple coming out with a 7-inch supposedly, and I'll never forget Steve Jobs saying he did not believe there was a market for that tween size, the size between a 9-inch iPad and the iPhone. He did not believe there was going to be a successful market for the 7-inch version of an iPad. And I guess that was to diss, you know, the Kindle Fire at the time. And you can't compare an iPad to a Kindle Fire. There is no comparison. They're in two totally different markets, and they do two totally different things. And I have a Kindle, one of the original Kindles. For consuming content and book reading, yes. But here's what happens and what I'm afraid, and I hear this happen all the time, and I hear this comment, where someone's going to buy that 7-inch tablet and think that they're going to replace their notebook. No, that's not going to happen. And I hear that a lot, where some, oh yeah, I'm going to replace my notebook with this. No, you're not going to replace your notebook with a 7-inch device, because the 7-inch device, like Kate said, great for consuming content. But when you got to create the content and you need that keyboard, game over. It's not going to be pleasant. And that's where I'm trying to set the expectations and the reality of a 7-inch device. It is what it is. And if you want that to read books and occasionally browse and everything, great. That's a great device for you. And go for it. But it's not for me. I got my 9-inch because I'm blind as a bat, you know, so I need the bigger text. And I need it just a little bit bigger, and the 9-inch iPad is the perfect sweet spot for me. It's thin, it's light, it gives me everything I want, and even that cannot replace a laptop. I have my laptop for my laptop things. I have my iPad for consuming news content. It's my RSS aggregator where I get fed all of my feeds, and I get my news, and I can browse, and that's it. And listen to Sirius XM radio on the app, you know, on there. So that's about it. You know, maybe a couple occasional other apps, MLB app, or that's it. I just wanted to set some expectations out there. But Kate, you're right. There's going to be a market for everything, for everybody. But I don't want people being confused and thinking that this 7-inch device is going to do things that it's just not going to do, being disappointed. So with that, here is voicemail where we have a question, and I have the answer. At least I have half the answer.
Hi, Mike. This is David again. I know that you have an app that can scan business cards into your smartphone and then take that and put it into a contact. And the problem I'm having right now is how to get that contact to then turn into a Outlook contact from your phone. I've tried several options, both for the Droid and the iPhone, and I need an equivalent for both for the place that I work. For the iPhone, I've tried Business Card Reader, and I have tried for the Droid, Cam Card Lite and Cam Biz cards for the Droid, and they all do a decent job of scanning the card and then turning it into text and into the different fields, but yet I can't seem to get it to turn into an Outlook contact. They say that they will do that for me in the app, but I haven't found it actually coming into my Outlook. Another option I've looked at is exporting it to an Excel file and perhaps then importing it to Outlook. Or there is another application called CopyTrans that claims that it can take a iPhone contact and then export it to a CVF file, I believe it's called, and then you can import that into Outlook. I was just wondering if you've ran into this, or maybe one of the other listeners have. Thanks for all the good shows, and thank you for helping out. Bye.
Great question. But you're looking at this, not incorrectly, but I want you to look at this in a different way. First, for the ultimate app for taking a picture of a card, of a business card, and putting it perfectly into the contacts, I love World Card Mobile. And I'll have a link in the show notes. Also, Winston in the chat likes Card Munch. I'll find that and I'll put that in. But if you want to properly sync, don't look for that app to sync. With your iPhone, you have the perfect app. Make sure you have the latest OS on your iPhone. And you can use iCloud. It's built right in. It's perfect. And that will sync to Outlook. Now, you need the Windows version of iCloud. And there's a couple requirements. You have to have Outlook 2007 or greater. And you have to have, I believe, Windows Vista or Windows 7. It will not work with XP. So I recommend Windows 7, Office 2007 or higher. Download the iCloud app from Apple and you can sync. So when I take a picture with my World Card Mobile app on my iPhone, I take a picture of that business card. When I get home and I open Outlook, that contact's there, and it's perfect. Now, on the Android side, I don't have the answer. And I know I've put this out there before in past shows, and you've given me some great tips. So going back to some older Mike Tech shows, you will find some Android apps, I believe, for doing the proper, not only a card scanner for the business cards, but syncing. What is the easiest way to sync an Android with Outlook? There's got to be a great app for that in the Android marketplace, I'm sure. I just don't know what it is. So if you can share with me what is the best app for syncing an Android to Outlook and what is the best app for capturing the business card and making it, and it will properly fill out all the right fields in the contact. So that would be awesome. If you can let me know what you recommend, and then I'll let everybody know. This is from Dan, and he says, "Hi, Mike, love your show. Sometimes I can find a rogue router," and this is in response to me noticing a rogue router out on a client's network, and we have to find this, "by running ipconfig on a PC that is receiving an out-of-scope IP and putting the gateway IP address into a browser. In the heat of battle, when I was looking for that router, I never thought of that, and that's a great idea. This can help identify the brand, if nothing else. Sometimes I get lucky and can log in using the default password. You can ARP the IP and try to track down the MAC and ping the broadcast IP on a layer 2 managed switch and identify the port it is plugged into. Well, this is a pretty flat switch, and it would be pretty hard. Now, Winston in the chat, Wireshark, that's another great idea, and that's what I think I'm going to have to bring in to play here and see what we're going to have to do is really off hours start to go through and figure out. The first thing I'm going to do, though, is browse to the IP address, and I bet you that's going to give me the model of what's happening. And then once I tell the doctor that, he's going to say, oh, I know, he's going to go, oh, yeah, that's over here. And he's going to know where it is because he didn't know what device is doing this. Thank you. Great idea. This is from Colin, and he says, hi, Mike. Thanks for reading my email about LastPass on your last show. I think the LastPass fan club got its message across. Regarding your rogue router problem, if it's broadcasting a Wi-Fi signal, try Wi-Fi Analyzer from the link below for Android, and he has the link. You might have to access the router's 192.168 configuration page to check the SSID and maybe MAC address, and then you can use the signal strength meter in Wi-Fi Analyzer to move around the building until you find the location of the rogue router. Great idea. Thank you. This is from Kate. I haven't tried this program, but Bryce from TechNibble has something in today's blog that might help you track down the rogue router you mentioned on the last show. And she has the link. If that's no good, you can try NSSIDER. I've used this many times, although not to track down a rogue router, and it works great. It will show you the networks in range, information about them, and if you move around the office, you should see a change in the signal strength, which might help you locate the router. She has a link for that. The Insider. I love the program. It helps me out time after time. Thank you, Kate. So we got two links for that. Again, on the Rogue DHCP, here is a utility to help you find the Rogue DHCP device on the network. It's called Roadkill's DHCP Find Utility. It finds active DHCP servers on your network, displays the configuration information offered by the server, including IP address, netmask, gateway, the server's network address, and the length of the DHCP lease are also given. Very handy utility for tracking down rogue DHCP servers during LAN gatherings or tracking down problems with your network. It is a very handy tool to have in your toolbox. I have had this problem before, and I found a printer server doing DHCP. Also, I installed a lot of 8x8 VoIP phone systems, and their fax adapters also does DHCP. One thing you can do is when you get a computer and it gets the wrong addressing, you could use the gateway address it assigns the computer and type it into a browser bar and see if you get Linksys, Netgear, D-Link login screen. This is sometimes the easiest way to find them. Or it at least gives you a brand of the device you are looking for, and it can narrow it down a little. Hope this helps. Also, keep up the awesome shows. I use an Android phone with Beyond Pod to download the shows. When your show hits Beyond Pod, it always is the first one played. Thanks, and this is Jason Miller. I really appreciate that, Jason. Thank you. This is from Tom. Keep up the great show. Just dropping a thank you note. I appreciate your reversal on your LastPass comments. I am glad that so many commented on the product. It shows that you have great listeners and you have a great reach. You handled the constructive criticism with class and style. Keep up the great show. Tom Dillon, thank you. This is from Jofred. Nice last show. We all make mistakes. The important thing is to learn from mistakes. But there are two issues I missed in the last show, and one new that I wanted to add after the last show about how to remember passwords. Not that all passwords are equally important, but a single password is not very good protection, and being clever makes it a lot worse. Important to know, even if we do not panic yet. One, the so-called security breach in LastPass that made the user change the master password. As I documented in my last mail, all that was found was unusual activity on the net. It was probably a hacker that got lots of data from the net. But since all the data is encrypted with the user's master passwords before going out on the net, the data is secure from hackers also in transit. Still, LastPass was open about the issue and suggested that it could be a good idea to change the master password. But no unencrypted data was lost. The Matt Honing case had one important learning point that was kind of lost. He linked his accounts so that access to one would get them all. The hackers also found some information from one site that was the information required to verify the identity on another site. The goal for the hackers was his Twitter account from the beginning. The Gmail and Apple account was just the easy way to get in. The destruction was just to cover their tracks. The way of using same username password is not a good idea. If one site is hacked, you are in the same mess that Matt was. That was that person where all their Apple products were wiped when someone hacked the Apple account. That was a Wired writer. 3, the effect of the massive losses of passwords from other sites getting lost and not being encrypted. The result of this is that there are huge databases of real-life passwords out in the wild in the hands of hackers. This changes the rules of the game. Instead of testing passwords one combination at a time, hackers can test all smart moves made by anyone to not forget a password. You endorsed a tip on how to make a password hard to crack. What statistics show is a pattern of passwords where the first one is uppercase and the other ones are lowercase, and then, for example, a 4-digit number. If you have a 12-character random password, you have 612 700 billion combinations. Given the described rule, the number of combinations is only 2.08 million. So random is important. There are many smart tries like this. Substituting an S with a dollar sign is in a memorable word was also a smart idea. More and more of the clever tricks are becoming part of the standard attacks against a new captured database, making it risky to use those tricks. Needless to say, you will then need a tool to remember the password if the password is meant to protect anything, since 12 random characters is hard to remember for every site you need. Absolutely. Once again, I will point to Security Now that brings the point home. Episode 366, The Death of Clever, illustrates the point. A 7 characters of a random password can now be cracked in 12 hours on equipment costing $12,000 today. Worst case, without applying the smart tricks to shorten the time. This is important to know when you protect something important. I will finish with a quote from this podcast, nailing the point on how the hackers can learn from the passwords they had to brute force. What smart move could have been done? The classic was transposing the keys on the keyboard. Yeah, they know about that too. There are dictionaries of all the words shifted one up and over to the left, or one down and over to the right, and so forth, all of that. So the idea is that what we as users need to appreciate is that this day and age, this is the low-hanging fruit. The hackers are just having a ball, literally spending their time thinking, okay, they'll look at a password that was captured and think, that looks random. Where did that come from? And they'll realize, oh, look, that's shifted down and to the right from a normal word in the English language. So they add that strategy to their cracking library, and suddenly all passwords of that form fall to the addition of the strategy. And this is only going to get better in the future. So if you haven't yet switched to something that will not fail to this kind of attack, the sooner you do, the better. Joelford, thank you so much. It's becoming very, very difficult. I always recommend 8 characters. upper and lower case mixed with a symbol and a number. And you got to remember that. And you got to have a couple of them because you can't use one for everything. You know, you're going to get so many opinions and it's so hard, but this is very good information to digest about all of the methods out there and what they're doing to try to hack our passwords. This is Eric. Mike, I'm catching up on your shows and just listened to show 414 during lunch. You were having problems getting public folders to sync up through ActiveSync. We had the same problem here when we recently purchased some iPhones. I find your solution interesting and did not think of creating a profile that is dedicated to syncing the folders. What we ended up doing is using a third-party program called OL Mixed Folders. It isn't perfect, but it did the trick. A word of caution, though, be careful if you choose the option to have the folders sync in both directions, because it will fill the user's profile contacts folder with all the public folders. At least it did for me. There were a couple other sync issues with some edits and deletions, but overall it did the trick, and it was only $30 per station, which is much cheaper than Add to Exchange, and it has its own laundry list of issues. Anyhow, I love your show. Thanks for all the hard work you put into it. Thank you very, very much. This next email is from Kate, and Kate sent me a link to her column where she describes and links the Windows 7 support cycle. So we're talking about the life cycle of the Windows operating system. And right now, the end date for XP is April 2014, where there'll be no more updates, no more security fixes. The 2013 is the year of upgrading. If you're currently using XP, or maybe you're in an office with XP, next year is the time to start budgeting and get upgraded. And you're going to have to make that choice to go to Windows 7 or Windows 8. So she talks a little bit about Windows 8. And then also in that article, she talks about Outlook.com. Thanks, Kate, for those links. Last week, I mentioned a problem where I accidentally deleted the note to contact in my iPhone. And I was complaining about the fields, not having enough fields. And this is from Dan, and he says, you can add fields to make mobile 2 or 3. Just go to the bottom where it says add custom label. And you have to do it for each contact, but it can be done. And this is Dan. Thanks, Dan, for that. So this way, you can have multiple cell phone numbers for an iPhone contact. Winston sent me a link from Lifehacker. Dragon Naturally Speaking Speeds Up Your Writing is free this week, down from $100. Windows Dragon, naturally speaking, is one of the most popular dictation programs out there. And if you're looking to speed up your typing, it's available for free all week. Boy, I hope I'm not late on this. Check that out, and hopefully you'll still be able to download it. I'll have to do that. This is from Norbert, and he's in the chat right now. And the subject is, did I fix it the right way? Mike, I was asked by a friend at work to help him with a virus problem on his HP 610 TouchSmart PC running Windows 7 64-bit. Apparently, one of his kids went to a couple of free music sites called FrostWire and BearShare. Man, I see this all the time. So, suffice it to say, the thing was hosed. I explained that he could burn a Kaspersky CD and boot up to clean up the system. Of course, no backup, but being a fairly new PC, there was nothing on it that was vital. Now, before I even continue, last night I had a complete fail using the Kaspersky CD, and it was the first time I really went to use it, and it was on a client's machine that was right behind me when I was recording Tech Vets, and it did not do it. It said it removed stuff. It did not remove the infection. And I had to go to my tried and true methods. This seemed to have worked, but he could not connect to the internet, even though he could see that he was connected to his home network. So he brought the PC to me. I took it home and ran several malware and antivirus programs against it and found several more items that needed cleaning. When I had three or four different programs tell me things were all clean, I booted to Windows 7 and tried to connect to the internet. No luck. I tried uninstalling the wireless and wired LAN controllers from the device manager, booted several times, and tried my best to get those things to work, but to no avail. I would get that there was a problem with the DNS server or something to that effect. I have several PCs hooked up to my network, and they all get to the internet. So I know it is not my router or my internet connection. So what I wound up doing is disconnecting it from the network, then going back to the furthest restore point that I could find that told me it would not be reinstalling the FrostWire or BearShare applications and taking it back in time. Once that was done, I rebooted the machine and once again ran the several rounds of antivirus. And oh boy, Norbert, you're gonna love what my recommendations are going to be. Oh, now until I'd found multiple confirmations of zero threats detected. I installed Microsoft Security Essentials and ran that just for good cause. All was well in the world again. But the thing that bothered me was that after I had cleaned it up, the first thing I could not get the PC to get out to the internet. By the way, this is very common. But doing a restore point put something back into place that I could not repair. That irritates me, and I could not discover what was destroyed. Now, I wasn't planning on spending a lot of time on this recovery project because, let's face it, letting the cleaners do their jobs is easy, and I can do other things while it works. And they really figure out what went on with not getting to the internet could possibly have taken me down a couple rabbit holes and a lot of time. So my question is, did I do the right thing by using the restore point method, or was there an easier way to get this PC to see the internet, and how can this type of problem be diagnosed? Oh, by the way, you need to update a couple of links on your software page. I found that there was a few that were out of date. Yeah, I got to go through that. Yes, I used everything that I could from that list that I could put onto a CD and use for scanning. Thanks for those, by the way. Norbert, here's the thing. It's a two-step process. You clean the system, then you have to repair it. Once it's cleaned with the viruses and the infections and the malware, whatever you want to call it, they leave behind a path of destruction that now has to be repaired. So you want to use the all-in-one repair tool from tweaking.com, the Windows repair tool, and that utility, and that'll be in the show notes. I link that all the time in my show notes. That utility, there's a portable version. You run it, and I select all 21 fixes. There's 21 separate Windows fixes, including not getting to the internet, fixing the host files, yada, yada. I mean, 21 common problems that are ruined by malware. And these 21 fixes, you just let it run. Takes about a half hour, sometimes longer, but you just let it run, let it fix everything, and everything will be repaired. At least I have had luck. So my thing is, if it's absolutely infected where it's really bad, like the FBI, that ransomware that takes over the whole system, if there's pop-ups and it's a true bad infection, the first thing I go to is Combo Fix. And what I'll do is I will boot into safe mode with networking and quickly run Combo Fix if it lets me. Some infections won't let you, so I have a registry hack that I quickly merge to the registry that lets me run executables and COM programs, and then I can run Combo Fix. I also keep their rkill, which sometimes helps. This is if the infection hits in safe mode. And let me tell you, most of the time, it doesn't hit safe mode. So you're going to be okay. So now, you run Combo Fix. After Combo Fix, then I run Malware Bytes, and I do a full scan. Once that's done, I'm pretty confident I can boot up in a regular mode. Now, I boot up regular mode, and I don't do anything else but run tweaking.com's all-in-one repair, and I let it rip, repair everything. Then I reboot. Then I will remove whatever antivirus they have. I'll put Microsoft Security Essentials. And now my new tips. I will put Malwarebytes, the trial version of the pro version, and I will tell my client to buy that. Yes, I recommend buying Malwarebytes because it will prevent many infections from happening. And any system that I've had someone purchase Malwarebytes, they have not contacted me again for a repair. Once I do that, I also add Web of Trust, which is an add-in for any browser you're using. So if they're using Internet Explorer and Firefox, I'll add Web of Trust into both their browsers. And there, that's free. And what it'll do is when the user is searching those generic terms like coupon or free music, and you know, all the bad sites will come up, then what it will do is it will put a red or green light that will warn the person to not go to that link. So in the list of links, you'll get little red light, little green light. Process that I just described has worked flawlessly for me for fighting every infection that I have ran across. This is proven. It works. And again, I did that last night. And let me tell you, it's going to save you. You're going to take a couple hours for cleaning the system and then do the repair. So remember, and this is something that always gets lost. You can remove all the infections, but then after they're removed, it's repair time because they leave that. It's like the hurricane that comes through. And now we got to rebuild behind it because it just destroyed a whole bunch of things. And so you run that repair. And if that repair doesn't work, there's another one called Internet Repair Tool that works beautifully also. I go to tweaking.com first, let it do its thing, and then only if something does not work right will I try the other utility. Now, I've been in a situation, and this is rare. If they're still having problems, because remember, going to the internet is just one thing. Now, I like your approach, which is you just went back to the beginning to when these programs were installed. That was actually a great solution, given that you didn't have this in front of you. So I agree with what you've done. But remember, going to the internet was just one thing. You probably repaired several things. Windows updates might have been broke. Firewall might have been broke. There might have been a whole bunch of other things that you don't even realize yet that were broken because of the infection. That's why we like using the repair tool. Now, Jerry just put in, why did you put in the AVG link in the... I do not endorse, nor do I like or approve of AVG. If you don't want to use Microsoft Security Essentials, then at least use Avast. Refuse to use Avira. And you know, I loved Avira. I refuse to use Avira now because the free version has too many ads and they are married to Ask. And let me, speaking of Ask, Ask.com. I am so mad. Every client that I run into, no one wants the toolbar. You know what? This is to Ask out there. If you were the last website in the world, I will not go to you. I will not use you for searching anything. When I see your toolbar, I will rip it out. And if I find that you're related to any product, I will make it my mission in life to never use a product just because of your horrible marketing techniques. I think it is reprehensible what they've done with marketing and shoving that toolbar down our throats. And I don't like it. I don't approve of it. And I will never, ever, ever support it. Ever. I said my piece. I had a couple emails asking me, what do I like in antivirus? And with what I just laid out and described, I think I answered all of that. So I'm not going to read those emails, which is I recommend Microsoft Security Essentials, Malwarebytes Pro, and Web of Trust. And that combination, it's going to prevent a lot of infections. And you heard me describe in detail what to do if you are infected. So let's continue with this email from John. And John is the listener that wrote in where he had that Outlook 2011 problem with his Mac. And he says, I'm a listener with the Outlook 2011 for Mac Gmail error issue. Too many simultaneous connections. Microsoft addressed this in their most latest update, 14.2.3. Good for you. And he details everything. I'm really, really glad that he got a solution to that. And I'm glad Microsoft addressed it because it didn't make any sense. It had to be within Outlook 2011. So glad that Microsoft fixed it. Now, on a different subject, cloud computing. Are we going backwards with cloud computing? When I started my career, data was entered into computers with punch cards. Next, IT departments started putting terminals in the offices, etc., where data could be entered locally and the computing was done in the cloud, actually the IT office. Then came the PC, where we can use everything from Lotus 1-2-3 in yesteryear to Auto, Mini, MathCAD, Excel, etc. Now, we appear to be going backwards. Instead of using the PC, instead of using the power on the PC, we are sending data to the cloud and letting a server farm do the computing. The big issue is data security and the ability to easily control and use your data. Finally, and concerning password resets and Matt Horn's account being hacked, I think we have a justification for maintaining landlines. The landline is owned and controlled by the telephone company. Your telephone number is associated with your phone in a specific location that has a hardwired connection to the telephone company's switch. I think the phone company is constantly monitoring their system to guard against intrusion and maintaining system integrity. A dumb featureless phone with no programming capability should be unhackable. If you register your landline with Amazon, etc., and the only way account information can be changed is by confirmation to your landline, the hacker would have to come to your house to pull off the hack. Most likely, that will not happen because the hacker will not be hanging out with you while hacking your computer. This may not be the perfect solution, but owning a landline is a good secure phone system. Any thoughts? And that is great. John, thank you. Great comment. Now, interesting, your comment on cloud computing. Yes, it's cyclical. And years ago, it was called distributed computing. And we basically would then get everything distributed and have it run out locally. Then IT and big places for budget reasons, and they say, oh, you can save money. We centralize. And you know what? You see it go back and forth that way over time if you were to look at all of this. And it is fascinating where you had the big irons, the mainframes, then we push it out to the PCs, and where are we heading back? Oh my, maybe IBM's on a comeback here. And you bring up an interesting point, but I think it's just with the way, I guess, society and everybody and the way we're thinking about different things. And now security, I think, is going to push things back or at least slow down the cloud computing. Because everybody's going to pause and think for a second and say, do I want all my data out there? And is it safe? I have a lot of clients going through this right now where they don't feel their data is going to be safe enough to store it in the cloud. So the big thing is backup, 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 regardless of what solution, making sure that they have a disaster recovery plan, making sure that they have a good backup model, that they're backing up. I make sure my clients, where they can, they're backing up locally and backing up to the cloud. It's very interesting. Time will tell here as we see this and how everything keeps evolving. Send me your thoughts on this and let me know. But John, great discussion points here. This is from Wendy, and it's about the IP camera software question. To the person who wanted advice on IP camera software, I recommend Blue Iris. They have a 15-day free trial and excellent customer service. Also, an active forum at www.cam-it.org. It's $29.95 if you use one camera, $49.95 for 2 to 64 cameras. A good price compared to other IP camera software, and Blue Iris is very functional. I haven't found any missing features, and the developer adds new features every month. Set a camera's frame rate and resolution, flip on reverse the view, set passwords, pan, tilt, zoom, move the camera on a schedule, motion detection recording, upload to FTP, view on mobile devices, send snapshots to email, allow user accounts and admin accounts, macros. Other alerts include notifying you if a camera is triggered. The alarm can be by a phone call or sounding an alarm, running a program or script, sending an SMS, email, or push to mobile app. You can set a delay of X amount of seconds so you don't receive too many alerts for the same motion trigger. There are many other features. These are the ones that I either use or can remember. Great show, Wendy. Wendy, thank you very much for that. Patrick Boyle sent me an email yesterday saying, why is the Mike Tech Show not listed on TuneIn.com? So I went to TuneIn and I registered and applied for having my show listed there. So let's see what happens. But Patrick was not the first person to ask me about that. So hopefully you'll soon be hearing the Mike Tech Show on TuneIn. I'm also filling out the app for Tech Vets, so you'll be able to hear Tech Vets. This is a follow-up from Nancy, who had a hardware question. I had written maybe a month ago with a hardware question. My HP EliteBook was having what happened to be hard drive issues. I was able to connect it via USB and grab all my data. I didn't have a copy of Crystal Disk Info, and I know I should, but as it turned out, I didn't need it this time. My hard drive booted fine in a Dell shell. The Dell hard drive booted fine in my HP shell. I didn't try to make stuff work. I didn't want to wait for drivers to load and all that. So I just put the drives back where they were originally on my HP, booted just fine. But I noticed that it was pretty warm. The first time I had the issue, the notebook had been in the case in the back seat of a car for an afternoon. The next time, I can't remember what triggered the issue, but I'm pretty sure it's all been heat related. I used canned air to make sure all the connections were clean and clear, then put it back together and it booted fine. So I shut down and left it overnight. The next morning it booted fine. I have been making sure it had clear airflow ever since then, and also got a cooling deck with a fan in it, USB powered, and I use it wherever it is on my lap or on a soft surface, and I haven't had any further issues. My husband has an HP G60 that has always had heat issues, and my kids have a Lenovo ThinkPad. Yeah, Lenovos are notorious for this. The T60 that has been slowly getting worse about heat. We each have our own cooling pad fan, which also serves to keep our laps comfortable while using the computers. I haven't had much of an issue with my MacBook Pro, but sometimes it does get hotter than I want on my legs. So for $20, it was a good investment. Thanks for the great suggestions and a great show. Eventually, I'll send you a letter with all the differences between working for a small privately held business and working for the DOD. It's a whole different world. Nancy, thank you very, very much. That was the last email. It's back to school time, and you don't want to run out of time now. You need supplies. You need something for everybody starting back, or just anything. If you buy from Amazon.com, don't forget to use my link, amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon. I want to thank everybody who's been using my links for all your purchases. It helps support the show, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so very much from the bottom of my heart for all of your use and your sharing of that link. It makes a difference. It really helps, and I really appreciate it. With that, that's it. I want everybody to have a happy and safe Labor Day weekend. Everybody who's celebrating that, if you're off on Monday, have fun, stay safe, stay cool, and I'll see you back here next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.